If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Traveler, episode 132. Today, the amateur traveler goes to Tunisia. Bazaars and Berbers, the ruins of ancient Carthage, end of Star Wars Tatooine. Today, on the amateur traveler. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into today's interview, I have a few news stories for you. In the first news story, it's tough to be an airline these days with the rising price of jet fuel and fierce competition. We've seen 2.5 airlines go out of business. I say 2.5 because ATA Airlines and Aloha Airlines have both announced they are closing their doors. And then Alitalia looks like they might be close behind after failing to do a deal with Air France. So what is an airline to do? Well, they can't really raise airfares without finding it difficult to compete against the other airlines, so they're finding other ways to add charges. I've got an article up on Tripinator.com called Air Travel a la Carte, which has a number of different stories about additional fees. We've talked about $25 to check a second bag, but we're actually getting airlines like Air Canada that's going to charge for customer service. This comes from a story from The Star. Air Canada said passengers who opt to pay an additional $25 one-way on a short-haul flights and an extra $35 one-way on long-haul routes within North America will receive, quote, speedy access to, quote, specially trained customer service agents who will help rebook flights on Air Canada or other airlines, as well as pay for hotel stays and meals if necessary. So you can buy better service if you have a problem with your flight. That's a different approach. JetBlue has joined United in charging for more legroom. The rates have gone up with Delta for unaccompanied minors, for overweight luggage, just a number of different things that are going on. Most airlines have gotten rid of pillows. Air Canada is charging $2 for a comfort kit, which is a blanket and an inflatable pillow. So they're looking at a number of different ways to stay in business at this point. And as if that weren't bad enough, they just might be flying to Heathrow. Heathrow's new Terminal 5 was 20 years in the making, counting all the planning that went into it, and it cost £4.3 billion. And in the first week that it opened, they had 430 flights canceled and lost 20,000 bags. They're hoping to straighten out all their problems. This is the new home for British Airways in London. And they've had all sorts of horrendous problems with this new and very expensive airport. I'm not sure if this is how they're planning on raising money to pay for the new airport, but there was a report that somebody bought 4 cups of coffee at Heathrow and it accidentally rang up at £361,514.97 As I calculate that, they only have 11,890 more cups of coffee to sell to pay off the entire airport. Links to all of these stories can be found at the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Hoyland, who is coming to us from Brisbane, Australia, but has come to talk to us about Tunisia. Welcome to the show.
Good day, Chris.
Tunisia is obviously an unusual destination. What led you to Tunisia?
Well, originally I intended to go to Italy, and when I went to see my manager about getting some leave, he was quite surprised that I was just going to Italy. I guess I developed a reputation with him because my last trip, I asked for 1 week leave and I told him I was going to Norway. So this time, I guess he was a bit underwhelmed and he said, you should do something else. So I thought, what's near Italy? And I thought, Tunisia, it's somewhere I haven't been to. So I added that to my trip.
So your vacation didn't get approved because it wasn't interesting enough, you're saying?
Exactly. It didn't meet the test.
Of all the different places, once we cross off Italy, why Tunisia?
It's always something a bit exotic. I always thought about going across North Africa, and Tunisia was one of the places that I was interested in. It was also a place where they filmed the Star Wars movies, so being a minor Star Wars fan, I thought that would be an interesting place to visit.
Okay. How far ahead did you plan the trip, first of all?
Probably about a month or two. There wasn't much planning, so I did actually get there a little bit unprepared. I made it up as I went along.
Okay. And let's jump right in then. What were the highlights of the trip for you?
It's actually very hard to think of a single highlight because there are so many interesting things there. The main thing that is of great interest to people is the history.
Sure.
Tunisia was the center of the Phoenician Empire, or the Punics, and there's a lot of ruins and histories there. Carthage is there. The Romans took over, and there's a lot of Roman artifacts and historical sites there as well. So there's a lot of history there to see. And the whole country is very different from other places in the world because it is North Africa, and you have the Sahara Desert in the south, these vast expansive salt lakes in the west, and also very dry and arid country, which you don't normally see, I guess, especially from where I am.
And how long were you there?
I was there about 9 days.
Okay.
A little quick for a trip, but I saw most of the things I wanted to see. It's not a destination with a huge amount of sights to see, so I just went from town to town and took it a little bit easy and saw most of the highlights.
Okay. Could you walk us through your itinerary a bit?
I started in Tunis, which is the capital, so I flew into Tunis. And basically, I did a clockwise trip around the country. So you went down the south, where there are a lot of historical Berber architecture. Mostly that's because the Romans, when they took over, they didn't get too far south. So a lot of the original architectures down and buildings and things are still preserved in the south. And then I went out around to the west. There's a large town called Tozer, which is a very nice base, visiting that area as well. And then I went back to Tunis.
Let's focus in on Tunis for a little while. What did you see in Tunis? What stands out for you?
Well, the main thing that stands out in Tunis is the museum, Bardo Museum, which is quite famous, although I didn't know about it until I went to Tunisia. But it has just the most amazing collection of Roman and other artifacts. Beautiful mosaics and statues and things that were in the country are in this museum, and it's well worth visiting. The other thing about Tunis is it's a very interesting mix of cultures. So you have this modern city, which has a strong French influence, as well as you have the older Arabic-type culture as well. So you have the mixture of old and new. You can actually see this quite distinctly if you look, say, on Google Earth, and you zoom down and you see this very chaotic, twisty part of the city, which is the Medina, which is the old city.
Okay.
And then you also see the very grid-like, regular part, which is the new town where the French still built their buildings. A very interesting mixture of two cultures and the old and new.
And anything particular stand out besides the museum?
The people. Sometimes I thought I was actually in Paris because you walk down these large tree-lined boulevards, people are there sitting on cafes, sipping coffee, speaking French, and they like their French baguettes as well. So you could easily do a double take and think you're somewhere else in the world.
Interesting. I think that's a very different picture than most of us have of Tunisia.
Yes, it's a very mixed culture, I think, in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it very interesting to visit, especially after you've been to some city, say Europe and the Middle East, you sort of get the best of both worlds in some sense, or you get reminded of those places.
And that may actually be your answer to this question, but what was your biggest surprise?
I think my biggest surprise was I discovered that the country has water which you can drink from the tap, something I never expected.
Interesting. Is there water more in the northern part of Tunisia? I think of Tunisia and I think desert.
I heard in a documentary that Tunisia was known as the breadbasket of Rome. So when the Romans took over, a lot of their crops and food came from this area of the world. So there must be somewhere where they're growing it. So I assume that's in the north, which might be more wetter, I guess. But certainly in the arid part of the country, which I went through, they were still growing things. So they get very little water during the year, but they manage to catch that and make the most use of it.
Hmm. Now, I'd always heard that Egypt was the breadbasket of Rome, but...
There must be a little rivalry there.
So you also mentioned going to the ruins of Carthage. Is that near Tunis?
Yes. Nowadays, it's a suburb of Tunis. So all you do is catch a light train out there, and you're in the middle of a residential suburb, but there's ruins scattered out throughout it.
So they really just built right around and on top of the ruins of the old city of Carthage?
That's right. There's not that many ruins, because when the Romans won the battle, they flattened the whole town. So there's only a few sites scattered out on a vast distance. So there is quite a lot of walking to do if you want to see them all. Carthage was a large city.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah. There's not that much to see. I think the main highlight would be to visit the old port, which is now a lake which opens out into the sea. That used to be the height of the Phoenician Empire, where their naval ships and trading docks were. So that's a good place to visit for its historical significance, even though there's not much there to see.
One of the other podcasts that I listened to, and a very well done one that I would recommend, is The History of Rome. And they've just finished up in that podcast talking about the Punic Wars, including Hannibal and the elephants and the Battle of Zama right outside of Carthage and such. So that's all very fresh history to me right now. Anything else we should cover before we start talking about some of the rest of your itinerary?
No, not really, because when I arrived, I didn't really spend much time in Tunis.
Okay.
Because I plan to come back there at the end of my trip, so maybe we'll come back to that.
Okay. And then you went south from there, and what did you see next?
I took a train from Tunis going down south, and I went down the south to see the Berber architecture.
Okay.
So these are things like kasawas, or in the singular, kasar. I'm not 100% sure how to pronounce that. But these are fortified granaries. They're like small round igloos, except they're a whole clump of them, and they're all centered around this rectangular square. It's a bit hard to describe, but...
To me, it looked almost like a pueblo, so built up on these hills and so built together. It's a real different architecture than what I was expecting from your pictures.
It is a bit like that, so it's a very earthen, flowing type structure.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like a beehive of them all clustered together.
I get the impression that this is a ruin, that people are not still living in. You had a hilltop village that you sent me a picture of, that this is not where people are living today.
Well, there's two types of ruins down south, mostly. Mm-hmm. There's the granaries. Certainly for all the ones I saw, no one's actually living in them. They're more storage places. And some of them are still being used for storing things like animals and grain.
Okay.
Most of the ones I saw weren't in use. They're usually positioned near a modern village as well, so there's still people in and around that area.
Okay.
There's also hilltop villages, which the ones I saw was totally abandoned. The hillside villages are quite interesting because they haven't been abandoned, and there's this very huge village, and you sort of drive through miles of desert to get to them. So you're in the middle of nowhere, and you come across this huge village built out of rocks and stones, so you can still see the extent of the walls of the place. You can just wander through it. It's not a very heavily touristed place, so often you're the only person there enjoying the serenity and quietness of these ruins. And once you get to the top of the village, which, as I said before, it's built on top of a hill, the views are spectacular, because you look out, you can see the whole village below you and around you, and you see the desert scape as far as the eye can see.
Now, how easy was it to get around? You said you took the train down and then you drove out, so you're doing a private rental car plus the public transportation. Easy to get around in Tunisia?
I found it very easy to get around. As I said before, I didn't really do much planning of the trip, so all I did was book my flights and everything else I made up as I went along. I mostly travel between the major cities using shared taxis. And what you do is you go to a shared taxi station, tell them your destination, and you sit in one of the taxis until it fills up with enough people, and then it goes. So it's very convenient. There's no timetables or anything like that. And it's very cheap, cheap way of getting around.
How inexpensive is it?
A few dollars.
For how far?
Probably about 100 Ks or something like that.
Oh, wow. Okay. That is pretty cheap.
I remember one day I traveled for about 5 hours for about $15.
Huh.
So it's very, very cheap. It's also very regulated as well, so there's no haggling about prices or anything like that. Get the experience of that sort of travel without the hassles of trying to barter about fares as well. So it's very convenient.
Now, I imagine there are other places that if you really wanted to barter in Tunisia, you can find that type of experience in the Medina or someplace like that.
That's right, in the markets, things like that.
Unless the culture had changed a lot from what I had read. And then where did you go after these Berber ruins?
Well, after that, I went to a very small town called Matmata, which is famous for their underground houses. And as any Star Wars fan would know, this is where they filmed the Lars homestead, which is where Luke Skywalker grew up on the planet Tatooine.
Now, when you say they filmed it there, I've always assumed that that's just a set, that there's nothing really Tunisian about that set. Am I wrong in that?
No, it's a real hotel and it's a real place. So there's nothing really artificial about it. They have put up props and things like moisture evaporators and futuristic looking doors and things like that. But other than that, it's a real place.
Interesting.
Very amazing.
And so it wasn't built for the movie?
No, not at all.
I did not realize that. Okay.
And you can actually stay there overnight. It's a budget hotel, so it's not very luxurious.
Okay.
But you can actually stay, and I'm sure if there's any Star Wars fans who wants to go, that's what they'll be doing.
And did you stay in that hotel?
Yes, I did.
You did? Okay.
Yeah. I went in February, which was the quiet season. It turned out that I was the only person who stayed at the hotel that night.
Oh, my. Okay. Did you find February to be a particularly good time to go?
I thought it was a very good time to go because it was a quiet season, but it wasn't cold.
Okay.
The weather was very nice, and there wasn't any crowds. So it's hard to imagine if there were going to be crowds, but it was a good time to go.
And what else did you see while you were in that region?
That was mostly it. There's not too much to see in Mat Mata itself other than the underground houses.
Okay.
And this is probably the case with most of the towns on your itinerary, that you go there, you probably spend one or two nights there, and you've seen most of the highlights and things like that. It's not a destination where there's many, many things to see in one location, so you do need to move around a bit to fill up your holiday.
Okay.
Unless, of course, you want to just stay in one place and just relax and wander around a bit. From there, I took another shared taxi to a town called Toza, which is in the west. And that's a slightly more touristy town in the sense that it has lots of hotels and restaurants and things like that. But it's still very small and laid back. And in that area, there are lots of desert trips you can make to the surrounding areas.
To see Bedouin villages or?
No. As I said before, most of those villages are in the south,
okay,
where they're more preserved. So you mostly go to the west. I guess it's more like a tourist resort to see the desert area.
Okay.
It's very well catered for in that sense because there are lots of tours you can take and things like that, whereas the other places I went to, it was very hard finding organized tours. So, for example, when I was in the south, I had to actually make a private hire of a taxi and just got someone to drive me around all day because there wasn't organized tours as such. I mean, it might be different if you were taking a package tour or something like that and everything's arranged.
Did you do one of the desert tours?
No, I didn't. It was at that point I decided I need to have my own car to actually get around, so I hired a car at Toza and drove myself around.
Okay.
Most of the other Star Wars filming locations are around Toza. I assume there's not many people who are that interested in Star Wars locations, so none of the major tours actually took you to the smaller places, so I had to hire a car to do that.
When you say other locations, like what?
Well, there's what people call Star Wars Canyon, which is a canyon they filmed a lot of scenes from the original Episode 4 movie. As you might have guessed already, that Tunisia is the location that they use for Tatooine, the desert planet. So a lot of the scenes from that first movie was filmed in this canyon, doubling as Tatooine. And the amazing thing is all these sites are still preserved to this day and just looks like, you know, the film crew was there a few months ago. And this, we're talking about 30 years ago, right? Things like the City Driss Hotel, some of the other buildings that were used, they're intact and just sitting there.
Interesting.
The other interesting thing is they haven't really made a fuss of this. So you go there, there's no tacky Star Wars signs or tacky souvenir shops selling you Star Wars merchandise or anything like that. It sounds like the whole country unaware of that these movies were filmed here. So it's very refreshing from that point of view.
Okay.
I guess I'm thinking some of your readers are geeky and Star Wars fans and things. And then,
well, I certainly am, so.
Yeah. If you wanted to go there, how would you find out about these locations?
Oh, that's a good point. Where did you find out about the Star Wars locations?
Well, mostly on the internet. If you just do a search, you'll find a lot of other Star Wars fans have created great sites about it. Since I've been there now, I've actually got my GPS coordinates on my website as well.
So
you can download,
okay,
those and go there directly. And you don't have to rely on strange men in the desert to show you the way.
Okay. We'll put some links to your website then.
And there's lots of photos on my website as well.
Great. And then what was your next stop?
Well, after Toza, I went back to the coast to stop off to see this Roman Colosseum in a small town called El Gemma, supposedly the fourth largest Colosseum in the world, and it's very well preserved. It's not totally intact like some other ones.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the walls are missing. The beauty of this place is you can walk all over it. You can walk around all the tunnels, all the passageways. You can walk inside the arena itself, and you can actually walk down underneath the arena to where the prisons, I guess, were held, or cages.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. is well preserved, and unlike, say, the Colosseum in Rome, is not flooded with tourists as well. So it's, again, it's a very nice experience.
Tunisia in general, you sort of got talked into there in the sense that you were planning on doing this trip to Italy. You ended up in Tunisia instead. What did you think of the experience? Would you recommend that people go there, or what type of people would you recommend go?
I definitely recommend people going there, but I think you need to be a slightly well-seasoned traveler to go there.
Okay.
So this wouldn't be on your first half a dozen destinations. You want to be ready for a more Middle Eastern type experience where you are traveling not in the Western world where there's regular timetables and everything's running smoothly. You also got to prepare yourself for a more rural life. When you're driving along the roads, you actually see a lot of open-air butcheries and things like that. The quality of the hotels are quite variable. You've got to be a bit prepared for a bit of discomfort, maybe. I booked my first hotel through an internet website, which I've used in the past, but the rating didn't really prepare for me for what I expected. It was clean and functional, but it wasn't very modern in any sense of the word.
It wasn't like you felt unsafe or it was unsanitary. It was just a little more rustic.
That's right. I think rustic is a good word for it.
Okay.
I actually found it one of the most safest countries I've been through in terms of visiting a non-Western country. I thought it was great.
Planning. You said you didn't do a whole lot of planning. Obviously, it was a little bit of a last-minute trip. What did you use to plan your trip?
Mostly, I took Lonely Planet guidebook and just went with the flow.
And why don't I have a sponsorship from the Lonely Planet with as often as we talk about them?
No, I don't know.
And what did you find that they recommended, maybe this is why, that wasn't a good recommendation for you?
The guidebooks all mention the Medinas are worth visiting, these walled old city marketplace areas. I didn't think they were that interesting. I guess partially because I'm a bloke, and partially there's nothing there I really want to buy or take with me. I'm traveling light. I don't really want to carry anything, and I'm only there for 9 days, so I didn't really think the Medina experience was that interesting.
What sort of things were they selling? I assume a lot of handcrafts.
Not that many, because these are functional Medinas, so it's more for the local people.
Okay.
Not for tourists, pots and pans and clothing and things like that. So it's not things a traveler would normally want to buy. Having said that, though, in bigger cities like Tunis, there are a few shops which do cater for tourists, but there's not that many. Again, it's a very refreshing experience, especially after, say, being somewhere like Egypt, where people are trying to sell you everything. They're not very pushy at all.
And then what do you think the guidebooks missed? What should they include in the next version?
That's a very hard question. I can't think of anything they've missed. I guess spending time in some of these ruins, especially these mountain villages. They only talk about them very briefly, so you think, I'll just go there and come out. But I think if you're that sort of person, you can probably spend a day there just enjoying that quiet, relaxed, get-away-from-it-all experience, which is something I actually took away from the desert. I only spent a few days in Tozer and other places, but when I went back to the city, it was quite a jarring experience. I thought, it feels strange, and I wonder why, and it's because even though it's a world I'm familiar with, there's a shock returning back to the advertising and hustle and bustle and everything else.
Interesting. And then we talked about the hotels being a little rustic. Were there any places you stay you would recommend?
Well, it seems like there's two classes of hotels. So the ones which aren't designed for package tours and people traveling on that high end, and then there's the other ones. There's two types of people who probably visit Tunisia. The ones who just go there for a package holiday, go to beaches and stay in resorts and things like that. So there's that class of accommodation. And then there's other accommodation as well, which is more variable. You know, there's something for everyone in terms of hotels and budgets.
So as you went further south away from the coast, you were seeing fewer five-star resorts and more budget hotels?
That's right.
Okay.
Mostly old-style hotels, which haven't been renovated for a long time, that sort of thing.
Okay. But still clean and safe?
More
or less.
Safe, definitely safe. I felt no problems with safety on the trip.
Okay. Food. How did you find the Tunisian food?
It was still nice. Lots of couscous, which is what they eat around that area. I discovered this thing called a brick, which is actually an egg and maybe some other filling inside a pastry, which they deep fry. And that's very delicious. I couldn't get enough of that.
Oh, an egg inside a pastry deep fried.
That's right.
Okay.
So the pastry is deep fried as golden and crisp, but they do it so that the egg yolk is still runny. So it's a very interesting dish.
Interesting. Okay. And that's a brick, you say?
Yes.
Okay. Most memorable person you met?
The most memorable person would have to be this person I met when visiting the Star Wars Canyon. Since this location is not really on the tourist trail, I really didn't know how to find it. I knew roughly where it was, so I drove there. but I didn't know which direction from the car park to go. And we're talking about we're in the middle of the desert there. So I was wandering all over, and suddenly, out of nowhere, this person pops up. And
it wasn't a sand person, was it?
No. But there was that feeling where they came out of nowhere. You didn't know whether to trust them or not. But he turned out to be very friendly, and he showed me the canyon and took me up there and back again for a few hours' hike. It's very enjoyable. The interesting thing also was he mentioned in his broken English that a previous traveler was in the area, and he was a big Star Wars fan and things like that. I didn't think much of this, but after I came back, a few months later, I got this email out of nowhere from this person, because I put up some of my photos on a website and he found them and got in contact. So that's an amazing coincidence.
Talked about him speaking his broken English. Any sort of problems getting around from a language point of view? You said a lot of French.
If you know French, it'll be very easy to travel around. I don't speak much French at all, if any, but I didn't have any problems with language. People are very friendly and helpful whenever needed.
What do you wish you'd known before you went?
I wish I'd known how the immigration process worked better.
Oh, really?
The guidebooks do mention this, but I didn't manage to read it before I got there. Tunisia has a closed currency, which means you can't take their currency in or out of the country.
Uh-huh.
You can't exchange any Tunisian dinars before you get there. However, when you get there and you apply for your entry visa, you've got to pay in Tunisian dinars. So you've got this dilemma where you've got to pay for your visa, but you can't have the local currency.
And how does one get around that?
So what they do is they take your passport, and then you go out into the country through immigration without a passport, without a visa, go to the ATM, get some money, and then you walk back through the gates at immigration, going the opposite direction, and then pay for it then.
Oh, but, interesting.
Yes, but if you didn't know this, and you didn't speak the language, which I didn't, and you got off the plane at midnight, it's a bit unsettling entering a country without a passport and a visa.
Huh, that's a different system.
Yes.
You didn't do a lot of shopping there. You mentioned being a bloke in the Medinas. What did you bring back besides pictures? Did you bring any souvenirs back?
I bought some desert roses, which are gypsum formations, quite pretty, and they form naturally in the desert. So that's what I brought back as my souvenir.
Okay. And is there one picture you took that captured Tunisia for you?
I think it's the picture of me standing outside the igloo that was filmed as the external location for the Star Wars movies. So what's impressive about it is you're standing on this vast, dry salt lake, which is flat as far as the eye can see.
Uh-huh.
And it's memorable because you had to drive across this thing to get to it. So you're driving across this featureless landscape, hoping somewhere in the distance you'll come across this one solitary building. Which yes. I should add is the exterior location for the Lars homestead. And okay. It's about 400-500 kilometres away from Masmata, where the interior is actually filmed, which really surprised me.
Sure.
The magical movie making.
As we wrap up this episode, is there anything else we should tell people if they're going to do a trip to Tunisia?
Travel light and enjoy experience.
Well, I thank you so much, Hoyland, for coming on the show and telling us a little bit about your trip.
Thank you, Chris.
The travel resource that I wanted to point out to you today isn't actually an internet resource. It's a seminar I went to from the National Geographic Traveler on photography. I review on it on my travel site, which is tripinator.com. But I would recommend it. It's about $200 and it takes most of a Saturday. But they had two different photographers, one certainly who had put a number of pictures on covers of National Geographic and other similar magazines, and another one who was more of a fine art photographer. Both came and spoke about technique as well as how to shoot better pictures and framing and a number of different things like that. So check that out if it happens to be in your area. I think you may have to wait till the next set of seminars. I think this set of seminars may have finished, but they do these periodically. In community news, I have caused some confusion with the time for the live show on April 12th. It's going to be noon Pacific and 3 p.m. Eastern. I've sent out information that said a couple different times accidentally. So I will try and send out some email to those of you who I have the email for to clarify that. But noon Pacific and 3 p.m. Eastern time is the time for the live show on talkshoe.com. And check the show notes for a link on how to get there. First in community news, a thank you to a couple people who nominated The Amateur Traveler for a Travies, which is the Best in Travel Blogging Awards under the Best Podcast or Video Blog category. I'll put a link to that for those of you who are interested in more information about that. I got an email recently from John. John writes, I first want to mention that I love your show and I'm an avid listener. I'm also an employee of American Airlines and I have the great benefit of traveling for free. That is a great benefit. I am 25 years old and have now traveled to over 80 countries, most of them in the past few years due to my airline job. I love listening to the podcasts of places I have been to reminisce and places I have not been so I can plan my next trip. There are a lot of places I would like to see done on the show, namely more of the Middle East, Caribbean, and Africa. Well, John, I hope this show is something along the lines of what you're looking for. I also love the theme song. Is the full song available anywhere? I get this question a number of times, and those of you who listen to this show for a while know I've answered it. I have created on the wiki a frequently asked questions, and this is the first question that I put in there, and it has a link to where you can find the full theme song. If there are other questions you think belong in a frequently asked questions that you've either asked already or have heard me answer or you think I should answer, let me know and we can fill that out. With that, we'll start wrapping up this show. Again, I'm hoping to talk to a number of you next week at the second Amateur Traveler Live show on TalkShoe.com. And that time again is noon Pacific and 3 p.m. Eastern. If you want to get a hold of me, feel free to send me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com or check out the many ways to contact me at amateurtraveler.com/contact. You might also be interested in following my Twitter feed at twitter.com/chris2x. And as always, thanks so much for listening.